Hello, welcome to the African Startup Teardown podcast. This podcast analyzes how African consumer internet companies grow. My name is Yemi Johnson, and with me is my co-host, Nnamdi Okafor. Today, we're going to be analyzing how Chipper Cash, a consumer fintech app for moving money, operates and grows. To help analyze the business, we're joined by the global head of marketing of Chipper Cash, Hassan Lohongo. So, to begin this conversation, can you tell us your story of how you joined Chipper Cash?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had worked on a startup idea in Kenya like maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And just, you know, it never took off, but it got me kind of into the world of African tech and then certainly African fintech over the last couple of years. So it's just general interest. And somehow I saw a tweet about Chipper from one of these sources, and just reached out to Ham from there and said, hey, this looks really interesting, and introduced myself. I met Meiji, our other co-founder, in San Francisco for dinner a few weeks later, and honestly, I was basically just hooked from there.
Oh, that's interesting. So are you telling me that the way to get to be the head of global marketing at a unicorn is to look out for the tweets of the founding members?
Absolutely, except for, you know, you got to start a little bit before unicorn status. So this was early days.
Okay, so basically, I need to be a believer in the very beginning. That's an interesting story.
Yes.
So can you tell us what Chipper Cash is and how has it evolved? How has the product evolved over the years? Like, what is it for the audience that don't know what Chipper is? And how has the product evolved over the years, or has it always been the same product over the years?
Yeah, so I mean, today Chipper Cash is, you know, the largest payments app in Africa. We do cross-border payments across 9 countries, and then we do local transactions with no fees in all of the markets that we serve. And so Chipper started as an intra-Africa payments app, right? So intra-Africa remittance was the pain point that the founders saw and said, hey, we're going to build something to solve this problem. And it has evolved since from there. Today it's really a suite of financial services, from remittances to crypto to fractional stocks and cards and more for the African market.
So I'm a bit curious, how do you think about rolling out products in each country, and how do you select the countries you launch in?
So Chipper started in 2 countries, right? So it was Uganda and Kenya were the first 2 markets. And it's an interesting point because, you know, it sort of says this is a Pan-African company from day one, right? And quickly then added Nigeria, Ghana, and Rwanda and Tanzania, kind of following there. So from there, it's like, if you have Kenya and Uganda, you look at the neighboring corridors and say, let's go find those, you know, let's go open up those corridors as well from the intra-Africa side, right? And then, you know, that Nigeria to Ghana corridor is a large one as well. And so you sort of unlock that corridor as we go forward. And then so the next part of it was South Africa, right? And you're saying, okay, well, you know, Southern Africa is a huge part of the continent, and South Africa is a massive economy. There was a strong need there. They're just not a current app that is that go-to sort of P2P payments app. And so that was an easy one. And then as we think about expansion from here, there's just other key regions. You have your Central African sort of Francophone regions. You certainly have neighboring regions of Southern Africa, right? So all of those neighboring countries from SA. And then you think about then the other big inbound remittances sources. So last year, we also launched the UK and the US, right? And our thinking there is, in order to serve Africa, you have to serve, you have to build globally. And those, you know, diaspora markets are a key part of the story. So we wanted to open up those corridors as well.
Okay, that's interesting. And since you launched this product, what has competition looked like? Or since you started rolling out payment solutions in each of these countries, what has competition looked like?
I mean, competition is unbelievably fierce, right? I think, you know, the interesting thing about us is that, you know, we have a couple of different key product lines. And within any one of those product lines, whether it's P2P payments locally or it's cross-border remittances, or crypto investing or fractional stock investing, you see strong players in each one of those niches, right, that you're competing against. And so, you know, in that case, there's so many competitors in different spaces. And then in the same way, many of those competitors are also partners, right? So you can choose to really, like, we have kind of made a conscious decision that it's not really worth it to look at, to constantly be worrying about all of the competitors. It's much more productive for us just to, like, continue going forward and build and building. So we're well aware of all of the competitors, but we don't spend so much time worrying about, like, each one popping up, right? You know, that would be all we could focus on, right? Because there's a competitor on every corner.
I totally understand that. I think the lesson is more to focus on your business than to worry about the competitors. And
yeah,
so
control what you control, right?
Yeah. And so right now, how does Chipper make money, or what's the business model around generating revenue for the business?
You know, the job that we do is we enable people to move their money freely, right? If you can quite easily set, add cash from a mobile money account or a bank account, put it onto Chipper, send it to somebody that's, you know, a family member across town, and then another family member that's studying in South Africa, for example, and all of that, you're sitting on your couch and you do in 30 seconds, that's pretty amazing, right? And for our local transactions, I mean, we don't charge any fees, right? So today, if you use any other service, there are fees when you're moving money, when you're making transfers, and when you're making payments, right? So for our local markets, there's simply no fees there, which is a strong value proposition for people to come on and try Chipper. And then we monetize across cross-border remittances, crypto, and fractional stocks. So I joined quite early. So when I joined Chipper, we were like 30,000 users at that point, pre-seed in the sort of funding cycle, right? But what was amazing is I mentioned how I met Meijin multiple times over dinner, and we would chat following up from there. And every time I talked to him, the growth had grown, right? So it was 30,000, and then it was 50,000, and then it was 60,000. And alongside of that, you know, active transactors and is growing alongside of that too. And that was very early, right? So the signal was basically that product was needed in the market, right? Intra-Africa remittances, making a payment between Uganda and Kenya wasn't an easy thing, right? And it was lots of fees and it was very expensive and it wasn't accessible to everybody. And so just by sort of unlocking that opportunity for people and unblocking that corridor, the company was getting early signal from users signing up organically and finding out about Chipper and making payments. So lots of really compelling early signal. And I think the founders definitely saw that as well. And the mentality at Chipper was never like to be a two-country remittance product, right? Like early on, the vision was set that we were going to be a global company and we were going to be all across Africa, right? So a lot of the hiring that the founders did early on was very like forward-looking, right? Over the long term, this is, you know, we're going to be a much bigger company and people are going to have, you know, bigger roles. And so you come in and it's a small team focus, but those roles have expanded out, you know, greatly as the company has grown. And it was, even a little bit more than that. I'm sure it was early days, it was quiet, right? But once people started using it, you could definitely see the early network effects, right? I mean, payments apps are fantastic for this because, you know, you need two people, and the way that Chipper works is a closed network, right? You have the app and I have the app and we send money. And so, a lot of that user acquisition was just happening on WhatsApp saying, hey, download this app and we can make this and I'll make that payment, right? So those early signals were, very organic and not coming from marketing spend or anything like that. So that's a fantastic signal for sure. I mean, I think if you think about remittance, it was a replacement, right? It's like the current solutions in the market were hyper expensive and inconvenient to use, right? And so in that sense, it's a replacement. In many other senses, it very much depends, right? So Chipper certainly consolidates key use cases. So send, receive, pay, invest, right? But it's also very interoperable from the beginning, right? So Chipper works across all major banks in Nigeria, South Africa, Kenya, and then all mobile money providers in mobile money dominant countries, right, across the continent. So it's key, the interoperability side that said, you know, we don't exist without mobile money providers, right, that cash in and cash out in those countries. So it's very much both. I mean, at the heart of Chipper is partnerships, right? So we started and from the early days, and you know, the entire product is built out of various different partnerships. The entire company really is based on sort of partnerships, starting with the co-founders, thinking about like partnerships with key influencers like Burner Boy and all of that. And at the very core of it, partners with other mobile money providers and telecoms and regulators, right? In those markets that we serve, so that we're able to kind of provide value and work within the existing network. So we very much lean on the side of partnerships. And then by the very nature of the product, yes, we are going to replace some of the, it is a consolidated suite of financial services. So it does replace some products for sure.
So I guess my question would be, how does Chipper Cash think around user acquisition? And Chipper Cash does a lot of brand awareness, right? So how does that work, right? Like, how does Chipper Cash strike the balance between online digital media campaigns and then offline?
Great question, and my favorite subject these days. At the high level, right? When we really started early days at Chipper, we were executing like core growth, right? So it was acquisition, activation, and retention. You've got referrals and paid acquisition, and then some direct install organic happening at the top of the funnel. And then you're doing various actions for users to start onboarding with like small discounts and promos and things like that to get them, to get them moving. And that was really the playbook we ran for quite some time. The beginning of last year, we were really thinking about, wow, Chipper has as a company, our profile is greatly elevated. Along with the funding sort of story that comes from that and the products that we were launching in the market, we felt like brand is that next level, right? And so you can grow for a long time, and we still always execute across core acquisition, but now we're just layering on brand and as a way to kind of really elevate elevate the brand globally, right? And so in order to do that, we've only started doing outdoor advertising, for example, in the last like 6 months, right? It's actually quite a new channel for us. And we think about it as top of the funnel brand awareness. So the same, images that you see on the billboard are also running on YouTube and hitting across multiple different channels, right? But it's about brand awareness and landing Burner Boy and telling that story through some really great influencers. And this is a new and area that we're really excited about. And so that's the core idea there, right? Is that you have, as you grow brand awareness and you build kind of some preference into the brand, that your downstream acquisition channels perform better, right? And we're certainly seeing some early signals of that and continuing to kind of refine and test our strategies as we're going. But early signal looks really good. The actual marketing spend to run all of these campaigns in a lot of different countries and markets, right? I mean, that spend has grown and will continue to grow as we're moving. We really look at like what stage is the market in, and we're not leading with billboards and outdoor, right? It's more of a, once we feel like we've reached a good layer of acquisition and those channels are working, because digital is just the closest touch point to the product, right? We are a digital app. The entire experience happens on your phone, right? And so start there and execute on those channels. That still is the, it gets the majority of the budget, but brand is like a long-term thing. So well before you can do and tell big brand stories, right, you've invested in production, in influencers, in many different ways. And so that's also a great thing about Chipper and a position that we're in today is we're very much thinking over the long term, and a brand strategy is not something that you turn on like performance marketing, right? So I can drive my spend up tomorrow across all of my digital channels by, you know, pressing a couple buttons on my computer, but brand is a long-term, is a long-term thing. And you have to think about it, you know, as something that's going to benefit and help you grow for many years going forward.
Yes. So I just wanted to clarify something. So you mentioned that right now, most of the bulk of the spend is, and when you get significant traction in a country, that's when you begin to think about, hey, how do we begin to build brand within this country? Because again, it's super easy to scale performance, or it's relatively easy to scale performance, but turning on brand could be a very expensive endeavor. And so just to clarify, you're saying you do performance in each country first, when there's traction, you then begin to think about how to make brand work in that country. Is that correct?
Yeah, at a high level, for sure.
Okay. Okay, great. Because I saw the Burna Boy ads here, but yeah. I'm just in Nigeria.
Nigeria is Chipper's biggest market by far, right? So yeah, that's by design.
Yeah, I guess my question now, a lot of companies struggle with attribution and knowing how do you really just think around brand for brand activities?
Yeah, I mean, if you're attributing brand to transactions, right? If you're attributing transactions to brand, then I don't think you're actually doing brand advertising, right? Brand advertising is you know, you have to set your goals as, you know, how has awareness in this market changed, right? How has preference for Chipper's brand changed, right? So it's a different KPI on brand, and it's a belief that that brand awareness layer and you know, cultural and consumer preference and cultural preference is like is an important thing, right? So we don't attribute putting up a billboard to, you know, to signups, right? But we definitely attribute increases in brand awareness and regular check-ins with our customers and with the general market to kind of understand how those numbers are moving.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think I agree with that, right? Yeah, I definitely agree with the approach. My next question would now be around, everyone says retention is king. How does Chipper think around retention, right? Like, what mechanisms does Chipper Cash implement for retention?
Yeah, we sure do. Ida, our director of activation and retention, works and thinks about this with her team 24/7, right? And just and for a long time. And so, you know, what we see is, you know, there's various like very key retentive events that users take in the app, right? And so we have various campaigns and strategies for incentivizing and driving those actions, right? But most importantly, it's about the type of products that you can build. So a cross-border, a single-use cross-border payments app has a limited amount of use cases, right? So even, you know, think of a family support-ish a use case where, you know, my kids are studying in the UK and I'm sitting in Nigeria, right? So I'm going to be sending that money to them, you know, once a month or something like that. But that's it. That's the only time I'm ever going to use Chipper, right? But when you add in something like, you know, crypto or fractional stocks, you're able to kind of, there's a whole different psychology to those products, right? And those are, hey, I'm investing some money. I'm going to check the app a couple of times a week and see how things are moving, right? And then you know, it keeps people coming back and it gives them that reason to kind of engage with Chipper more. So it's both from a product strategy and then certainly like where you're putting incentives in the funnel to drive these use cases, right? I mean, a good example, I worked for this company a number of years ago called Your Mechanic, right? And so, and it was like a marketplace for, it was like Uber for auto repair, right? And in that business, like auto repair is one of those use cases that only happens a couple times a year. And when you need it like now, right? And so in that use case, right, like you have to be top of mind for the user, when the need comes up, right? And it's very similar with a payment. When you need to send money, like the need is immediate, right? And so, but it's also not like something that you do very high frequency. Auto repair you do like once a year, or maybe once, you know, two times a year, you know, averaged out across a large cohort of users. And so that business was hard to scale on LTV and frequency of use. When you look at something that where something like Uber, you use rideshare much more frequently, you order takeout much more frequently, and so they have, you know, those certain use cases have highly a much higher frequency of use, and so having a mix of the two there, I think, is really strong.
How does that affect the economics of the business? So if you started out with cross-border payments and say maybe you'd take a 1% or 0.5% take rate on each transaction, and now you layer on airtime, layer on crypto, you layer on stock trading, there's a lot more for you to take, and it makes the product a lot more compelling for different use cases. So how does that affect the economics of the product? Does it change that, hey, before where you could only afford, say, a $2 CPA, for example, Now you can afford a $5 CPA, or does the economics of the business remain the same?
No, greatly improves, right? So, your CAC to LTV ratio improves, and thus giving you a little bit more movement on the CAC side to be a little bit more aggressive and look, you know, broader funnel, broader targeting, for sure.
Something that a growth perspective where, hey, we need to extend our LTV and we need to extend our ability to acquire or to extend our ability to afford an higher CPA. Is this something where growth then says, let's layer on more products so that we can afford, we have better economics? Is that a function that growth drives, or that's more from an executive strategic or from a strategic position from the executive office saying, hey, we want to layer on more products because it makes our app more compelling? Or does that decision come from the product office, where product is our vision for the product is to be a one-stop shop for everything financial services?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you think about the executive office, you'd think maybe like that's Ham, right? And then you think of the product engineering side of the business, and then that's Majid, right? So and then obviously many, many leaders below that and teammates, but that vision of, you know, they're on the exact same page, right? And then that and that, because it also, they know that, you know, that drives growth, right? That by adding these products and having a, you know, more useful suite of services is going to drive, you know, both retention, LTV, all of the key factors that, you know, any business is looking to optimize against, right? So I think the clarity of that partnership and being on the same page, you know, has very much guided that, you know, that approach, and with growth in mind, you know, has also been, you know, that's definitely one of the factors that they considered as, you know, and, you know, setting that strategy, excuse me.
Okay. Yeah. Definitely loved the response. I'm a big Bonaboy fan. I've been listening to Bonaboy.
Nice. Me too.
Since he dropped Like the Party.
Sorry, I have to also say me too also.
me too. Yeah.
I guess from a business perspective, right, like how such a decision saying, hey, we need to sign a huge celebrity, whether it's Burnout, it's Whiskey, like how do we sign someone of that caliber? So how do you justify that and say, yeah, this is the right thing and this is what the return on this spend would look like?
Sorry, just to ask, if you could share the backstory behind getting Bonaboy, that would also be very interesting.
Actually a pretty good story there. But in terms of like where this started, so I mean, there's a quote recently that I read from Ham, right? And he said, basically, Bonaboy is one of the strongest partners any organization can have, right? Someone who's continuously raises the bar only to break it. And his greatness is instilled in his humility and love for Africa. continuously representing the continent at the highest levels. And so that gives you some context, I think, in terms of how, where Ham is at in this discussion. And so, you know, that started, and that's been, you know, that relationship is strong between Ham and Burner Boy, right? But where it actually started was, you know, on a Slack thread and in many, many years ago when we were first starting, and I was like, yo, we should get Burner Boy. Like, that would be amazing. And you know, Ham was like, oh my God, that'd be so dope. Like that, you know, like, you know, what can we do here? We were like pre-seed, like early stage company, right? And we sent out all various inquiries and all of that and like just never heard anything back, right? We probably were far too early in our, in our time to reach out. But as Chipper's profile sort of grew, I think the idea and the desire was, you know, increased, right? And what we were looking for was not a major celebrity. Like, we were very much looking for Burner Boy and kind of had that initial. So we didn't like go through an evaluation of the 10 highest, you know, like biggest social reach folks in the influencer sort of music space, right? We were saying like, this is the direction that we want to go. This is like somebody that can really carry the brand and help us grow and is sort of aligned from a vision perspective, right? And so the way that it actually came about was his team was in Los Angeles, and one of our agency partners, you know, that we had been working with, when I had mentioned that, hey, we're interested in talking to them at some point, shot me a message and said, hey, these guys are in town. They're leaving in 2 days. Like, can you meet them tomorrow? And I said, yes, absolutely. Right. So rushed to kind of find like a really great location and somewhere where I thought was going to impress them and it'd be cool. And so that meeting was just with Madame Bose, who was his manager, and his mom, and then Ronami, who's his sister. And, you know, just ended up really fun and a really cool conversation. And we hung out for 3 hours and talked a lot about a lot of different things, and really set out that foundation of like, yeah, this feels like there's strong alignment here, right? And then, you know, the story progressed from there as we got into, you know, negotiations, and all of that stuff takes time. But we landed with a really strong, we started with a really strong alignment, and we started with just very, very early. This was just like kind of a dream, right? So, it's cool to see it come to fruition and know that it kind of, you know, was started off as an off comment randomly on a Slack channel.
Very impressive story. Feels like that whole Twitter ad campaign of tweeting it into existence.
I was going to say that. What we need to do is that we need to start manifesting in our group chats.
Yeah, yes, exactly, yeah. Right. But the point here has been that it's that this is who we've always wanted to be associated with and get him at any cost, right? When the video actually went live and the announcement went live, I got a lot of people to be like, Chipper Cash has done madness, and like, really, been.
You're just trying to flatter me now, like, yes, but yes, that's great.
No, but that's like, I don't think like there was anyone that didn't talk about it. Yeah, it felt like a master stroke, right? Chipper Cash had come a unicorn, and the next thing, Chipper Cash and African Giants. So like,
yeah.
My next question, I've spoken about this quite often here, is the goal for Chipper Cash or the next step in the evolution to become a super app, or how do you think about rolling out products? Is it products we think will help drive down, like drive up our retention, or is the goal here like, you know what, we're just going to become a super app, we're going to integrate everything, that kind of vibe?
You know, I it's somewhere in the middle, right? Because like, we're not like gonna go and do a ride sharing business and like all, you know, in all of these different sort of areas that you think about could consolidate. I mean, I don't know, maybe we could. I shouldn't say that, right? But the core sort of focus, right, is just looking for products that are going to unlock opportunities, right? So the first use case of this product is a cross-border, is a great example, right? So think of a web designer in Ghana, and then like more easily now take on projects in the UK for, and you know, they're potentially higher, and then, you know, say he needs to pay a contractor in Uganda, and then and a developer in South Africa. Like, that use case is functional and it works, right? So we think about that as a key kind of opportunity unlocked, right? And when you bring a fractional stock product to market in Uganda, which previously had never accessed, there was no way to really invest in stocks, definitely no way to invest in fractional stocks, definitely no way to, you know, take money from a mobile money account and then put that onto a wallet and invest money in stocks. You know, that's an opportunity unlocked for wealth creation over many years, right? And so, that's the ethos, right? And I think that like there's a lot of things that are strategic that you think about downstream, right? And how does this fit in and that. But if you can lead with that direction, then it kind of makes it easy, right? And you see those opportunities and you go for it, right? In terms of the product strategy overall.
And how do you quantify the number of use cases, or how do you think of finding case, the research process that goes into the use case and establishing a number of people that you could be potentially solving the problem for?
I mean, our user research team has just been doing some amazing work and just talking to our customers and really kind of in bringing people closer into the fold and having user groups and talking about different use cases and needs, right? And so as long as we're starting and we stay there and we're talking to customers and hearing feedback about, you know, what problems they're having and different things that they're seeing in the market, that's the starting point for sure. And I think that's been like an early strength of Chipper, but certainly over the last year, as that team has really built up, we've just been finding out and getting a lot of great insights that are really kind of starting to guide a lot of these product decisions. And so just getting better and better at talking to your customers.
Okay.
We have a network API product, and we have, I think, over 45, 50 partners currently in beta using it across a whole bunch of different use cases, from gaming, healthcare, insurance, a bunch of different things. It's basically like, you know, it's payment, it's disbursements on the network, and then paying through Chipper, right? So Chipper has a very large user base of users, and you know, with a pay to Chipper button inside of a gaming app or inside of a of any kind of a service like that, right, where you can pay with your Chipper account. A good example of that is our new Twitter Tips feature, right, where you can link your Chipper wallet to your Twitter account, and you can tip people directly on Twitter, and you can receive tips directly on Twitter into your wallet and then cash it out however you need it, right? So that kind of a focus there is really how we look at it.
Okay. And so currently there are a ton of fintech players, but not all of them are unicorns. Maybe there are a handful of them that are unicorns. So what do you think it takes to make a fintech player as big as Chipper? Is it the team, the product being phenomenal, network effects? Like, what do you think it took for Chipper to be as big as it is?
Sure. I mean, it's the combination and add a couple sprinkles of luck to it, right? So the product early on, simple, it solved a core problem early on, right? So that's a huge start for it. There is network effects in payments products, right? So that also works well. And then certainly, I mean, I think I mentioned it just briefly before, but you know, starting with the founders, just setting a huge vision of the company. The goal was always to be a big player in the space. And then again, like hiring for long-term impact early on. So really kind of focusing on some of those, you know, key hires that you may not make that may seem like you were bringing them on early, but, you know, as then you're scaling and growing fast, it pays off in troves, right? So a lot of credit, you know, going back to the founders, just in terms of both setting the vision and building the team for sure.
Okay. So you've spoken a bit about network effects a couple of times. Can you speak about how network effects in payments, at least in the case of Chipper Cash?
Yeah, so pay, So payments apps are more useful with the more people on them, right? So if every time you need to make a payment, the other person needs to first go download the app and do that, like that, you know, there is some friction, right? So a large install base is a driver of utility in a product like this, because the, you know, the likelihood of the other person having the product currently, oh, you're on Chipper, I'm on Chipper, boom, the payment's done, and it happens in 2 seconds, right? So that's one driver. And just the fact that every, you know, behind every single transaction on Chipper, there's two people, right? There's a sender and a receiver, and then there's a conversation and a relationship there, right? That you know, that happens on WhatsApp, that happens in real life, right? And so by bringing those people together and kind of, you know, having two people involved in every transaction, that, you know, that also drives some virality.
Okay, understood. So my final question, and this is a quote from Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett says that, "I try to invest in businesses that are so wonderful that any idiot can run them, because sooner or later one will." That's Warren Buffett. And so my question is, at what point do you think any idiot would be able to run Chipper?
Okay.
I think Warren said it as a compliment to the business, not as an insult to the executive team.
So I'll narrow it down to marketing, right? And I'll say pretty soon, right? So Chipper is a fantastically great product to market that I would say almost anybody could do it.
Yeah, but I mean, is that humility that I smell?
Yes.
Are you just being humble? Okay.
No, I mean, well, I don't know, you know, but I mean, it was, you know, definitely a joke, but I mean, it is true, right? I mean, the growth of Chipper and just been amazing. And it certainly is not the cause of, like, it wasn't just great marketing that got us here, right? It's a contributing factor, but like the movement early on, the shipping speed of the team, the sort of dedication and drive across so many areas to both expand and set up shop, work with partners, all of that stuff, right, has makes it easy to market Chipper, right? It serves a need, it provides value to the end user, and as we kind of, you know, continue to tell that story, you know, the growth happens there. So you know, I would lean back on that and say, yes, absolutely. You know, like, and sometime soon, any idiot could be running the Chipper marketing department.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank
well,
you.
Well, be careful. Inam might be coming for your job then.
We got you.
Thank you, Hassan, for joining us today. If people want to reach you or follow your thoughts, where's the best place they can?
Sure. I'm at Hassan Luongo on Twitter, HassanLuongo. And on there is actually on my Twitter profile is a link to WhatsApp. So you can just come in and onto the Twitter profile and shoot me a message. I'm happy to chat.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Hassan. Maybe one of our 1,100 listeners would do that. Thanks a lot for joining us, Hassan.
Thank you for having me. It's a fun conversation.
Thanks a lot for listening. If you like this podcast, please rate us on Apple Podcasts if you're an Apple Podcast listener. If you listen via Spotify or any other player, please like and rate us positively. Thanks a lot, guys.